Welcome to the SoxCast episode 175. And dear friends, we are on a timer. I woke up this morning with what feels like the beginnings of a cold. So that's fun. And maybe it's just like the changing of the seasons or whatever. But we have T-minus whatever until I'm becoming a terminally whiny baby. Because that's what...
That's the only way to react to having a cold.
That is the only way to react. Like, I am just the... Like, it's not even, like, angry. It's not miserable. I'm just like, this sucks. Why do I have to feel this way? And it's just... That is exactly how I feel for the next week. And I'm just the worst person to be around. Nobody would want to be around me. So it's good that we're getting this out of the way before I get thrown into that. But don't worry. I may be on the cusp of literally dying, but that will not stop us from shoveling spoonfuls of that good old SoxCast opinion and critical discussion stew right into your ear holes. I said shoveling spoonfuls?
You can do that.
I guess there's a lot
a spoon is just a tiny shovel.
Sure. There's like definitely a lot of like spoonfuls depending on the size of a shovel, but you couldn't do it like the other way and say, you know, we're going to spoon some shovelfuls. Yeah, I can't spoon a shovelful of things. Unless it's one of those little, you know, sand pail things you play around in with kids. Like, you might get a spoon or two out of that, but yeah, like most spoons are not going to really matter much in the terms of it. Because I got a pretty big snow shovel. It's a big wide boy. I think that thing's like a foot wide. And if I like tried to put a spoon at anything in the middle of that, I just don't think it's going to cover, you know, much of that surface area. And what is happening?
Let's shovel a knifeful of good takes into your ear holes.
There you go. We're shoveling a knifeful of good takes into your ear
holes. Let's stab our listeners in the ears with our takes.
Yes, I think they prefer that at this point. Mm-hmm. You know. To my immediate virtual right, bask in his forever effervescent glow. It's Rhett.
Yes.
Could have went like forevervescent. I think that's is that a word? Forevervescent? I think that
we're
that
just making language is fluid.
We're just getting a lot of wordplay in here. Holy crap. Forevervescent, huh?
Sure.
Doing all right over there, Rhett?
Yeah, let's get this over with so we can go play some games.
Play some games? I don't really know that they're like anything that to be in that big of a hurry about. But sure, I guess.
Yeah, Rhett. Jeez.
Gosh, like looking to already just shove this thing on home. Hey, can we get to the outros now?
5-minute episode.
Yeah.
That would be a really good bit to do at least once.
I know. Yeah. Like, just like, yeah. And I can't think of like the perfect thing to do it with because it's always there. It's always just like, that is a thing that we could pull out at any time. Even though we're talking about it now and it wouldn't be a surprise, it would still be a very funny thing to do.
As long as we're doing like 10 episodes at least.
Yeah. Be good. There you go.
It usually works better as a live stream where it's like, oh, the stream ends if something happens and then it happens immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
To my immediate virtual left, he has no comment on the matter or the rumors. It's John Thayer.
That's me. Okay. So, an ongoing thing, starting with the beginning of the... I'm not going to go on about this because it's the worst thing in the world for people to talk about, like, their tech. But every single episode, since getting back here, like... Since we started, I was like, I want to care about my audio quality this time. And every single episode, there's been like one new thing that I did that has made it better. Every time. It's like I got 10 parking tickets in college, and every single time it was for a different reason. Ugh. And I feel like this is the same thing where it's like I'm learning by failing over and over and over. And now I have my checklist of like 10 things I'm doing. And I think we should be good. I think we're just about there.
You think like
the microphone
next
is
time,
on?
It's on, which is a start from when this call started. The microphone was not on.
I know. All right. So again, most boring thing in the world is to talk about tech, but I'm trying. So, you know, feel credit, bully me as much as you want.
It only makes him better. Out. It only makes him.
It just makes
better.
Me better.
It's for his own good.
Absolutely. 174 episodes, and I'm getting there.
You're getting there. Like, 176 is going to be the one where John finally gets his shit together.
And it's
going to
be perfect audio.
We're going to just, the call's going to start. We're going to have some banter, talk to each other for a little bit. There's not going to be a single issue going into this show. 176 is where it all happens. So tune in next time where we will absolutely update you on if that occurred.
I don't think it matters if y'all have to deal with problems. I only care about our listeners.
Exactly. Like, it doesn't matter that the people most directly affected with John having to fadoodle around with his garbage every time. You know, people that just want to get a show done, maybe because they're feeling a little sick. John was, I don't know, I don't think I'm going to turn my mic off on purpose. It'll be a funny bit. I'm playing.
I get it.
There you go. There you go.
You get it.
I get it. You know what else I get? I get that people are probably like, all right, guys, the banter's worn thin now. Move on. Come on. Get to the part of the show we want. Get to the part where we've all been waiting for. We know you're going to do it. It's like, all right. All right.
Okay.
There is an elephant in the room. We we are vastly aware of the very big elephant in the room. We are aware of the situation that we are in right now, I guess. So I might as well, like, go ahead. Be the one to like
rip off the band-aid
and get this out up front. We all know that there's been a pretty big release lately that is just a hugely anticipated follow-up to pretty highly regarded game released around 2017, 2018-ish. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do it, y'all. We're just going to get it out of the way up front so people can just like, you know what, zip past this if you want. I'm going to go ahead and dive in, and I'm going to talk about the latest novel from my friend Cupin named Three Wishes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, this is a good... Three Wishes...
Just a chonky boy.
This ended up being much chonkier than I thought it was going to be, because this is the third game in the Lily Pad Lily series, which is a series of visual novels about a fictional idol girl named Lily Pad Lily, and her idol group members join in the second game. Those first two games, Lily's Day Off and Lily's Night Off, are absolutely delightful, just fun, cute little comedy-based visual novels. A lot of gags. That Lily's Night Off just goes exceptionally hard after the first one. Like, if you look at Lily's Day Off, it's very, like, this is a visual novel. I can look at this and say, that's just a visual novel. It's, you know, pretty standard. Mm-hmm. And then you look at Lily's Night Off, and there's this huge explosion of creativity that happened all over the place. And those two games, like, I finished both of those in one stream each, whereas I needed to do three streams for Three Wishes. This thing ended up being way chonkier than I thought it was. So it makes sense this game has actually been in development since about 2015 is when he started getting all of the stuff together for it, like all of the notes and stuff that he's included in the game actually show like early sketches and stuff dating back to 2015. Even though Lily's Day Off and Night Off kind of came out, you know, while he had worked on this one. So
was this kind of like the real goal all along then?
Like, I feel like this is kind of what he wanted to do the whole time, but he just kind of like has built to it. Each one, because each game is iteratively just better than the last. So this one, as you may assume, just goes all freaking out in terms of just like when you look at this game and its presentation, you look at its trailer, it's just like, oh, this is so much different than like what you see in normal visual novels. And if you just watch the trailer, there's just so much going on. But so this game kind of starts the same way that the other Lily games do, in that you are the self-insert character who is just you. And you end up having a chance encounter with a cute little idol girl. And this time around, it happens to be Lilypad's little sister, Addie. So you're going to hang out with Addie and her little subgroup of idols. And they're known as the Lil Pads. Lil Pads. It's sickening. It's sick. It's disgusting how freaking cute it is, honestly, is it not? And so you end up becoming friends with Addie because Hey, good people give you head pats. She asks you for a head pat. This game's got head pat tech in it. You best
gameplay mechanics.
Dude, head patting is literally a game mechanic in this game. It's a big thing about how this whole game works.
Watch out, Cold Steel.
Watch out. Watch out. Like, the characters jiggle realistically, like their hair swishes around and everything. It's just real cute when you do the animation and just rub the mouse thing over their head. You can head pat them at any time, but there are certain points in the story where it's required to do so.
Visual novels with jiggle usually means something else entirely.
Yeah, I've played a couple of those, and it's definitely meant something else in those aspects. But you end up kind of hanging around with the little pads for a bit, but then a star crashes from the sky, and everything is changed, and you wake Jeepers. Up, and you're confronted with this cute little girl who's just like, hey, I fixed all of this stuff up. It's no big deal. The city is not destroyed anymore. You know, thank me. I'm awesome. But also, hey, do you want to work for me now that you have amnesia? And you're just like, yeah, sure. Why not? What do you want me to do? And she gives you basically what is the equivalent of a little smartphone, a little pager. And she's just like, just press buttons and watch the screen. And what you're doing is you're making all of these idol girls, and they're hanging out, and you're making them make wishes. So Sati is the cute girl that you wake up and have to be employed by. She goes to these girls and she grants their wishes, and it's your job to kind of monitor it, make decisions and make choices. And it's set up kind of just like all of the other Lily games, where you start the game out and you're given this list of three wishes that you can make. Mm-hmm. And then when you pick that wish, then along that route, there'll be two more wishes that you can make. So each route is like a 20 to 30 minute little story in how these wishes are going to play out and affect one another over the course of the game. So it's just like, oh, you know, you started out, it's just like, hey, I wish, I don't know, what's a stupid kid wish? I wish we had infinite clothes. And then, you know, the scene changes, and then they get infinite clothes. But then something else comes up later in that story where it's just like, okay, well, now who else gets a turn to modify this wish or make their own wish that changes things? And as you can kind of imagine where it goes from here, is it's going to be like Wishmaster stuff, where it's like, oh, the wishes are going to be granted, but there's going to be something real messed up with it. And that's kind of the cycle of the whole game, where it's just a continuous path of insanity. No matter what route you pick, there are routes where characters are going to be killed. There are routes where characters can become fascist dictators.
This rules. This is so good.
There are routes where, hey, why not? You know, everybody just gets turned into candy. Why not? So there's a lot of ways they can go with this. I don't want to spoil any of it, because I think all of the routes are genuinely freaking hilarious. And I think that that's a big important thing. I think that's one of the hardest things to do, is make a funny video game. As somebody who has made one or two funny video games and is basically the expert at this point, I think that it is hard to make a very funny video game. And I think that Cupin has done this miraculously three times in a row. Like, he's just, he's just got this range of humor that goes from like, oh, that's cute and funny, to, oh my God, that's just really dark and also very funny. And this game just like runs the gamut of that. And it also just has a really awesome and wholesome ending that completely caught me off guard. That just like, it really like touches on a few things about like the nature of the things that these girls are wishing for. And it kind of digs into those things, and it digs into the characters and their own insecurities in ways that I didn't expect as well. So there's just like, I think that of all of the games, this is the one that kind of has the most balance between, like, it's funny, it's cute, and it's also got, like, a little meat there thematically that makes you feel like, oh, like, everybody learned something. But it never loses its sense of just being absolutely out of its mind bonkers. and again, incredible presentation, looks gorgeous, just like it's so dynamic in motion. Like there's so much animation in the sprites and so many like props that get used in every scene. And there's just like, I think there's something like 36 like original CG ending scenes where like he just contracted a bunch of artists to, hey, draw the ending. So you get a lot of really cool styles in that way too. Our girl Melly got one in. I noticed hers immediately.
Oh, nice.
I noticed hers this immediately.
So nice.
Yeah. Yeah. This game, a fantastic piece of work. Like I love it. Like I said, like I think being able to make people laugh with a video game is one of like the hardest things to do. And I think that doing it with this one, like just absolutely nailed it out. Yeah, just knocked this one out of the park.
I really like that kind of structure where you just diverge into wildly different directions.
Yeah. All three Lily games do that, where they're just all like little 10 to 30 minute stories that all kind of compound onto one another somehow. But like you finish it and it's just like, oh, okay, I did that route. I did like a 10 or 15 minute story. I can just come back to this later if I want. Like you can play it in little bite sized chunks if you want. And I think that's also to its benefit.
It's like Hunter Line Academy squeezed like,
I was going to say,
oh my God,
0.5%.
The Hunter Line of Lily games.
Jesus. It is the biggest Lily game. So I mean, if we're going to compare it to Hunter Line, why not?
Yeah, Rhett, this is basically the same, right, Rhett?
Yeah.
Rhett's over here in, like, the hell of, like, two straight months of playing this one VN.
Took breaks, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
This sounds delightful, Polly.
This is. Thanks for sharing this with us. I had a smile plastered on my face the whole time. And this is, like, at a time, like, I kind of had, like, a bad week last week. But like, this game, like, just floated me through. Kept me smiling when I needed it. So, I'm always going to appreciate that when a game is able to kind of be the...
It's really nice when a long-awaited sequel, like, delivers on all expectations.
Absolutely! Absolutely. I did read another visual novel. This one has nothing to do with sequels, though. This is a completely original work. I read A Return to Shironagasu Island, which, put simply, I actually let's played this one, so... people have probably
you've been posting this one.
Yeah, people probably saw it on my timeline quite a bit while I was just releasing the episodes. But this is kind of just like a typical like mystery novel where there is an island and then there's some old affluent dude that killed himself because of some shit that happened on the island. So you're a detective and his family has contacted you. Like, hey, go to that island and find out what happened. We want to know why this dude offed himself. That's weird. And you're joined by what I can only describe as the most blatant Tomoko Kuroki ripoff I've ever seen. If you've ever seen Wadamote, if you look up Neneko from this game, she is literally just Tomoko.
Oh my God.
It's so blatant, but
good.
So this story, it's weird because it feels like the author wrote it without a plan at all. And along the way just kept saying, okay, and now I want to do this. And now I want to do this. And now I want to add this. And since nothing was ever planned or a part of the story just starts to feel completely out of tune with itself.
Ah, gotcha.
This game's bad, by the way. I'm just going to say it now. So by the time you get to the dumb attempted zombie apocalypse reveal... and then the out of nowhere villain that literally has no stakes in the story wanting to do the next stage of human evolution plot dump.
Oh boy, we're just hitting all the best tropes.
This
now
this thing just shits all over itself and wallows. It's like, I've never read a story like this. This is so confusing to me because I've never read a story like this where the characters aren't characters. There are tropes that they lean into. You've got the shy, awkward girl, like the stoic, obviously important to the plot girl, the abrasive one. But you literally find out nothing about any of these characters that isn't something that's required to move the story forward. When terrible things start happening on this island, like, nobody has a realistic reaction to any of it. Like,
yeah.
Y'all just saw a burnt corpse, and the only person freaking out about this is the shy, awkward girl? Like, and characters, like, they only have motivations and emotion when the writer thinks, oh, it'd be cool if she said that right now. And, like, the funniest thing is you literally never end up finding anything out about the main character and Neneko. Like, we never find out, like, how they know each other. What is their relationship? Why is she in America? She just flies back to Japan at the end, and that's it. This is single-handedly one of the worst visual novels I've ever read. I'm not even...
One of the worst.
I'm not being hyperbolic.
Like, but at least you finished it, right?
I finished it because it's like sunk cost fallacy. I was like episode 8 when I realized, oh, this is going to get real shitty, isn't it? And this is like, shit, dude, I've already recorded. So that was another thing. It's just like, okay, how do I remain entertaining while reading through a story that I'm obviously just not liking at all, but trying to, you know, like, look, if somebody's going to watch it and stay invested, it's an interesting thing to have to balance, because I didn't change my thoughts on it or lie about how I felt, but I was very, very upfront. It's like, yo, this is getting real dumb and bad, and I hate this, but you've also got to kind of like not be that for an entire video, because that would be annoying. So it was at least an interesting exercise in like, how do I remain entertaining and not become insufferable about how bad this game is? Yeah, like, this game is just bad. Like, the writing and the characters are just so ridiculously god-awful. And I have no idea how this game has the positive reputation it has.
I think this looks like an artist game. They have a very loved on Pixiv. They have a lot of followers on X for a lot of really pretty art.
I think
this is somebody that... somebody that is really good at art that hasn't really done much writing.
I'm pretty sure I read that this was their first actual writing project.
Yeah.
So, and it, boy, boy, oh boy, does it feel like
it? Show.
And I feel like, yeah, like, this game's got a great look to it. It's presented really well, but oh my
God.
And
as we've seen, that's all that really matters.
Yeah. See, Three Wishes is also an artist game, because Cupid did all that shit by himself. The only thing he didn't do was the music. He coded the engine and everything in Unity on his own. So, Three Wishes is also an artist game, but Cupid also, like, knows how to write.
It's just a hard thing, and people don't really... I think you just run into that a lot, where it's like... in games especially, like, you'll play the big dream action game, and you'll get to the cutscenes, and it's like, oh, y'all put a lot of time and work into learning these other things, but
not the
just kind
part,
of assumed that this part was easy.
Yep, that's really like, man, it's just like, this game just has characters pull shit out for the convenience of plot for just so many reasons. Like, there's at one point that, like, the main character is mentioned to have had a Yakuza background, but then it's just like, but it's only done
doesn't
for
come
the,
up again.
Never comes up again, and it's only done for the point of making him seem like a badass in the moment. It's just like, what? It's so, so bad. Ugh, don't play Return to Shiranagasu Island. Go play Three Wishes instead. And that's all I have to say this time. John!
So I was just looking at, like, various, like, responses to the VN and whatnot. Cool. All right, well, thanks for pulling us into the... You, as always, are the most plugged into, like, contemporary indie VNs.
Yeah,
I try. Both. English language and Japanese, and I really appreciate getting that lens.
I appreciate that observation.
Yeah. Well, I played a long anticipated follow up. To a really beloved VN, Metroidvania platformer that came out some time ago. And I played the follow up and I really, really liked it. But I played Super Junkoid.
Super Junkoid.
I also played regular Junkoid. These are just cute games. I haven't played that much in the realm. Basically, I talked about this when talking about Pokemon Odyssey, but I'm trying to make a point of doing playing more like ROM hacks and fan games.
Yeah.
Because that's just a strong realm of like very developed scenes and aesthetics. Like that's the big thing with like with playing the Kaizo Mario games is like you have a whole language of people that are drilling down over 10 plus years figuring out how to make this specific kind of game really, really well. And that's not a thing you really get in just playing kind of a lot of original works, is you get that like community focus on one specific vision. Or like one specific play language and exploring that specific play language really exhaustively. And I think that's cool. But I've mostly, I played a lot of Kaizo. I played Pokemon. We talked about that last week. Or last podcast. I played very little Metroid. I played Metroid Rogue Dawn years ago. I thought it was cute.
Yeah, that one's good.
I think that one was too hard for me. I get stuck in these and it's like,
they often don't have the niceties that, you know, that more modern games of this ilk do. And it's just like, when you get stuck, it just can be like, oh man, I'm missing the pixel, aren't I?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, is it's very easy to lose trust playing games like this. Yeah. It's like, oh, this is just a fan game. It, like the second that you feel like you're being jerked around, it's easy
to just write it off as like, oh, okay, this is fan game jank.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, a lot of times that's fair. That's true in that's true of all amateur spaces, is that a lot of the time you are being jerked around, and that's okay. And,
the Metroid ROM hack scene is like kind of big, but like very, I feel, underground and like full of undiscovered treasures, basically, but it can be a little
bit. Yeah, absolutely. I watched footage of a brand new one. It was like Metroid X Fusion. And I just got YouTube recommended like the finale of it. And it was like, what the hell? I just watched it for like 20 minutes and I was like, damn, I probably should have played this instead of watching this. This is crazy.
Had that happen a couple of times where I'll watch somebody stream a game and it's like, I should have ducked out of this stream after 10 minutes.
But it looks pretty crazy. Junkoid is so. So Junkoid is by Kiyoshi. And I played the first one in like a sitting. It's like an hour and a half. The first one, the main area has a map and then the rest of the game doesn't. I found it like I was comfortably able to play it without needing to like take notes. I could just keep the layout in my head, which is very satisfying. Every secret block has a tell. So you can, if you keep your eyes peeled, you don't need to bomb randomly. Just
original Metroid is crazy about that.
Yes, exactly. So but the maps are big and mazy enough that it's not trivial to keep it in your head. I really had to kind of like stay focused and stay in it. And it really kept me engaged and focused the whole time. I really, really liked Junkoid. I think my problem with Metroid Rogue Dawn, and it's going to be a problem with all of these, is like the climax has to follow the shape of the original game.
Yeah. Like that's a technical thing.
Yeah. And Rogue Dawn, it felt really labored, where I was just like, it kind of, the illusion that I was playing, you know, a cool original game built out of the Metroid engine I'm playing a Metroid hack.
Yeah.
And Junkoid is the same way. I think that the narrative in Junkoid lends itself better to that. It didn't feel like things collapsed the same way. I felt like, you know, the mother brain sprite redraw and everything. It felt solid. It felt solid to me. Mm-hmm. I really like this one. I think for a majority of folks listening to this, they're probably going to prefer Super Junkoid.
Yeah.
Because it's just gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Super Junkoid looks phenomenal.
Super Junkoid is so pretty. And it's just like, regular Junkoid is like Metroid 1 where there's no map for most of it. Mm-hmm. But Super Junkoid is more like just, you know, a normal modern Metroidvania. Yeah. You have the big map you fill in. Ultimately, once you find the map in the zone, it marks all the power-ups so you can't miss anything on the map. Mm-hmm. So it's very comfy and like gentle to kind of puzzle your way through. And I think I would be, you know, pretty put off by that. Except that it's just so fucking pretty.
Yeah, it's phenomenally gorgeous.
It's and just as we've said, visuals are all that matters.
And it's got a big ass penguin in it. You cannot go wrong with a big ass penguin.
It's got a big ass penguin. There's a few original ASM bosses that are really cute. Mm-hmm. I just like this. I like this one a lot. This one, I felt like Junkoid handled its climax elegantly and how it had to kind of match the originals.
Yeah.
This one does not. This one feels like I was having a really good time, and then the climax, it just has to copy so many beats straight from Super Metroid, and it doesn't really set them up at all. So that is a weak spot here, is that I don't think the story really comes together in the end. But if you're up for just enjoying the kind of the Yume Nikki vibes of exploring this world and having a very nice sleep, because getting the pacing of this kind of game right, where you're like kind of Zelda dungeoning your way through the areas of getting like on opening this door and opening this and having things. There's a biological themed area.
Ooh.
That's really, really pretty. And the nature of the whole area changes when the organism dies. Mm-hmm. And the way that plays out is just sticks in my brain for how cool of a place it is. I think that's the kind of thing you really want out of games like this, is just creating that really strong sense of place.
Yeah, like Phantasy Star 2 does something like that in the back half where all the enemies become like biological, like, you know, mechanical fusions. It's just like, that's one of those things that, like, I'm always reminded of Phantasy Star 2 when games kind of change the very nature of its place like that.
Or like when the opening area in Hollow Knight changes to have all the
the infection, when the infection spreads.
Yeah. That's so good.
Yeah, that's
for me. I'm just so like, amazing. Oh, I know which Super Metroid area they reskinned this one for.
Yeah, yeah.
Does Junkoid do anything interesting with like actual power-ups, or is it just kind of Metroid?
It constantly changes. Super Junkoid especially changes. Both of them change the power-ups a lot. One thing is that they make wall jumps and speed booster and shine sparks a prescribed power-up instead. And I saw somebody say like, oh, and they also make the wall jump a lot more forgiving. And I saw someone say like, oh, this is such an improvement over the janky wall jump in Super Metroid, and I wanted to throttle them. That's the point, is that it's annoying, but you can do it from the beginning at any point and break the structure of the game. That's what's like cool about it.
It's meant for you to be inquisitive to, because you like when you jump against walls, you can do it accidentally. And that's how most people find out, you know, or that's how most people found out back in the day. These days, everybody, you know, every guide in the world says, oh, here's how you wall jump in Super Metroid. Mm-hmm. But when you found that out yourself, it was like the weirdest damn thing.
It's so cool. It feels so good to learn. And the bomb jumping is the same way.
Yep.
That to me is the cool thing about Super Metroid still. Like the thing that a friend made a good quip, which is like, it's very easy to take bad lessons from Super Metroid.
Yes.
And very hard to take the good lessons from Super Metroid. Yep. And I think this is an example of a game. It flattens out the things that make Super Metroid interesting and turn it into just kind of a normal indievania. So that's you know, a little bit of a bummer, but the game's so pretty that, and it's so pretty and punchy that I still had a good time with it.
Mm. Oh, wait, did you prefer Junkoid more?
Yes, yeah, I prefer Junkoid more.
Absolutely okay. Thought that, yeah, John enjoys Junkoid way more.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's shorter. It's yeah. It feels a little less at war with itself on the ROM hack stuff. Mm-hmm. But
see, I had thought you were building up to, and then Super Junkoid is able to remix the climax more dramatically, and then it's the opposite.
No.
I wonder what it is technically where they aren't able to even just have like, and then when you hit this flag, the game ends.
It's yeah, like, just do something different.
Do you just have to end it with an escape sequence or the game crashes?
Do you have to have a baby Metroid cutscene? Do you have to have this and this? I liked it. I like these a lot. I think there's an RPG Maker game or something that they made even before these. I'm going to try to take a look at that. Mm. But it was just nice. I was in the middle of a lot of like big, long RPGs. So sitting down and just chewing through like two things in like one sitting was really comforting. I don't have a lot to say, but I also played A Plumber for All Seasons, which feels the same way.
Yeah, that's absolutely the thing that came to my mind when you were like, oh, this is just a nice, pleasant, pretty thing to play through. Not a lot of friction, but it's very pretty. It's very loved on. It's got a lot of moments that make you go, how'd they do that?
I think those two are absolutely comparable. Yeah, I think
for sure.
I think that's a great, like, I've played quite a few fan games lately, and those two are both ones that are very easy recommends to.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the folks listening to this would be Super Junkoid and A Plumber for All Seasons. A Plumber for All Seasons is a great one for just like, I want to play a vanilla Mario type experience. It is creative mechanically. It's just a cute playground platformer. You find the secrets in the levels. Every level has a cute gimmick. It's gorgeous. You get to the end and it says inspired by Kirby Return to Dreamland, Donkey Kong Country Returns, and the scenery of the German countryside.
It's not a Kaizo at all. And even just finding the secrets, there's nothing Kaizo about it at all.
Oh yeah, I didn't have to look up any of the secrets. It's very comfy and playable.
It's better than Mario Wonder. I would play A Plumber for All Seasons over ever playing Super Mario Wonder again. I didn't hate Mario Wonder, by the way. I just, it was all right.
Oh my God. I saw footage of Mario Wonder and when it was first announced, and I said, this kind of just looks like more new Super Mario Brothers. And then everybody poo-pooed me like, no, look, the animations are really different, John.
It looks so much better. Sorry.
I think that it's art style and everything that everything it's doing is still way more interesting than new Super Mario Brothers. So I'm not going to, I don't think that it's just new Super Mario Brothers.
Sure. But it's that happened and then it came out and everyone was really orgasmic about it. And I bought it. And then I got really into Kaizo hacks
instead.
And then like a year later, everyone's like, it was fine. It was okay.
I think that's like, me and Polly like dominating the conversation on socks at that point.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but y'all are the ones whose opinions matter.
Which is true. That's true.
No, that's there's a lot of folks who are like, Wonder was fine, actually. And I'm like, listening to the zeitgeist. Fuck. I'll play it sometime, but I'm glad. I think A Plumber for All Seasons is a little bit more my speed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And one more game. Mm-hmm. This is talk about. Well, this is another follow up in a beloved series that was kind of long awaited when it came out.
All right. Okay.
I played Pokemon Sun.
Uh-huh.
Oh, right.
Right. Yeah.
That one was a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, you tried. You really tried. Swung for the fences there.
I know, yeah. This is really funny because I played this following up on Pokemon Odyssey. I just was like, yeah, I want more Mario, more Pokemon. And I looked up I was listening to like the soundtrack and I was like, what the fuck? This sounds really good. Which is the same way I played Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Explorers of Sky. It's like, what is this soundtrack? So then I played it and the soundtrack was really good. And I posted online, I was like, God, I forgot how pretty AAA games can be. because I was just like looking at the scenery and the colors and the super saturated colors of this like tropical paradise. I'm like, oh.
John talking about AAA games and he's playing a like 2014 3DS game.
2016. Thank you very much.
All right. Rhett? Not that old.
Yeah. No, this is in the last 10 years, Rhett. Hot off the presses.
Not even a Switch game.
It's decidedly decidedly not retro. I mean, that's the Kirby I'm going to play next is the one on 3DS.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So this one I wanted to bring up just because I had a really funny response to it. Cause like, I know that like 10 years ago, John would have been, well, I tried this and when it came out and I was like, oh, I hate this. I cannot play this. Because you immediately get like a diegetic mini map that at all times points on your map where you're supposed to go. God. It's like, this was already Pokemon. You really needed like the BioShock floating arrow in Pokemon. This is already a game for babies. And you you were like, oh no, this is too demanding. We gotta, and not only that, but if you go off the path more than any other game, like for the whole game, they will be like put up like in-game barriers where there's an NPC in front says, no, you have to go do this story thing before you can go through here. Like it constantly does that. It makes the Mother 3. Can you not go back through here? There are ants and you don't actually step on them. It makes that joke like 10 times.
Oh my God.
Like it is constantly making barriers.
What if the Snorlax just happened to fall asleep and block the road?
It makes that joke like that. It does the literal barriers that are just constantly recurring. And then it has like variants of the Snorlax Mother 3 joke like 15 times.
Oh, good. That's good.
It is rigidly linear and it is easy. So this would have been like complete John poison like 10 years ago. When I was just shitting on, like I tried Skyward Sword when it came out. I was like, man, I hate this, and returned it. But I was just kind of like in the mood for it. I was feeling kind of tired and I turned on set mode. I didn't use healing items in battle, and that was enough to like give it a little bit of oomph. Mm. And I turned off battle animations.
Okay.
And yeah. And I let myself skip trainers sometimes, and that kept my level a little bit low. So the whole game was like this kind of this meta balancing act of like, let's try to get through these routes and whatnot as quickly as we can and keep my level at like a place where the boss fights will be a little bit punchy.
Right.
Which is, you know, kind of a fun level of meta engagement. And I got to like enjoy the normal Pokemon arc of building a team of six Pokemon until they're strong enough to beat the big boss gauntlet at the end. But I think the funny thing with this game is the game itself is very handholdy and for babies. And in universe, like in the original Pokemon games, like the gyms just feel like a part of the world where it's like, oh yeah, people fight these gym battles to get things and do the Pokemon League. And it's very impressive. In this one, like the grownups around you are like, oh yeah, this is the coming of age grand trials that all the children do on the island. And they just kind of like step you through it and walk you through it and explain like how things work. And the effect is that the main plot of the game, doing these trials, doing basically the gyms, is an in-universe obstacle course that the adults set up for, that the adults in-universe set up for your character. So it's like, even in game, you are playing a cute game for children. while in the real world, you're also playing a cute game that adults made for you. And I think the only reason this is interesting is that the main villains in the game are, the main villain of the game is a shithead parent.
Oh, okay.
Who sucks.
The perfect villain, actually.
Yeah, and they actually don't flinch on that at all. It's kind of crazy.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
that, but two of the characters are meek, are just like these, like, one of them is really meek and scared, and the other one is like, has a big chip on his shoulder and is really mistrustful of everybody. And it's because they both had to deal with like the shithead adult who's the main villain. And they're both traumatized from that. Yep. And like across the game, I kind of got this effect of here's how adults should treat kids, which is affirming them, supporting them, letting them figure out some stuff on their own, but keeping guardrails up so that they can be safe. Mm-hmm. And then here's how a bad way to treat children.
Yeah.
And here's why. And by the end of the game, like, because of, you know, the silly obstacle course you've been on, you're actually strong enough to fight the shithead adult head on. And then you're able to have a fight with like the good adults and have like a cute climactic battle with them as equals.
But you're still doing it with like, here's my Bulbasaur, here's my Chim Pokemon, here's my Charizard. Eat that, Dad. Eat that.
I think that there's some really, really nice warm theming in this one. That about like, it feels like it feels like when the people making it were like thinking about what they were doing and how they wanted their game to like, if they wanted their, how they wanted their game to like come across to kids playing it. Mm-hmm. And I felt very warm and fuzzy at the end, and I cried a little bit.
Oh, beautiful.
It's just, I had a cute time. I don't think it's like a big essential thing or anything, but I think it's fun that after 10 years I played a new Pokemon game and I actually had a really good time.
That is pretty surprising, yeah. Given your arc with that franchise.
Yeah.
Given especially where, this is the sequel to X and Y.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is that X and Y, the story is fucking nothing.
Isn't that the one with like, it's been 84 years?
Yes. Yeah. And that bit whiffs. That bit is nothing.
Okay. Everyone knows that.
It's been 3,000 years. They're like trying to do a Mother 3 thing, but they have like two scenes setting it up and it doesn't work even a little bit. Yeah. I can't emphasize enough. It completely whiffs. It's really funny because both this game and Black White have like a cute romance date moment, mm-hmm. With the rival, where like you ride a Ferris wheel with N and you hide from rain under a little rock cropping with Lily in this one. And then X and Y does it where you watch fireworks with the girl. And I saw Yuri art of the main character and that girl at the time. And in game, it's fucking nothing. Black and White is great. This Sun and Moon, it's great. It's actually layered because you care about those characters. And then in X and Y, you don't care about anybody in that game. It's all just like, you're just going through the motions of playing a Pokemon game because you want to make a team and fight an Elite Four and whatnot, which is fine. But I appreciated that Sun and Moon just had a little bit more going on.
And I think X and Y and Sun and Moon, they have the second versions. And uh-huh. I think both of them just basically rip the story out.
X and Y didn't do that, but Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, yeah, they completely changed the part. According to my friends, they completely changed the part I liked the most about it.
X and Y, I meant Black and White 2 ripping the story out.
Black and White 2 is like a sequel where it's actually
okay.
I mean, I don't know, but yeah, I get what you mean. I had a Pokemon arc. I'm glad I very nearly jumped into a third Pokemon game in a row, and then I managed to stop myself.
What was it going to be?
The first Mystery Dungeon.
Ah.
Play that one, and then there's the two 3DS ones that people really like.
So you played the second one?
I played the second one last year, and yeah, I want to play the one first
everyone
one,
loves the most, the Sky.
Which is the one people love the most. The third one after that apparently has the worst gameplay of all of them, but it has a story that people like about as much as the one I really liked. So,
The story is important.
So, you know, it's just had a fun time. My Nintendo pilled arc continues, unfortunately. So, Rhett.
Okay, we've danced around it long enough.
Okay, I'm thinking, how long does this goddamn bit go?
It's like a good bit, but we gotta retire.
We kinda gotta let you finally, alright, like you've listened this far, you finally deserve the good stuff. Alright, Rhett, let you do it, man, let's
rip off the band-aid.
Okay, I fell victim to the zeitgeist, the game everyone's been talking about. Mm-hmm. The team made a game in 2017 that I was a little mid on, but I decided to check out, you know, their follow-up. I played Donkey Kong Bonanza.
You have a Switch, too?
On my brand new Switch, too.
Oh my God!
What? This is just completely fucking out of nowhere for me.
I was very numb about this one.
I completely forgot that you got a Switch too. Right?
I didn't process it. I don't think he mentioned it. I don't remember it.
The only thing I've done is add Bonanza to my backlog. I was like, John might see this. It's fine.
Oh,
I think you added me at some point to be like, no,
no. I made jokes about it, but I didn't specifically say I was playing it.
Oh my God, that's right. So funny.
You've left us in utter shambles here.
So this is a Mad Max Fury Road-like where you, as the strong and awesome Donkey Kong, help a small girl named Pauline who wants to go to the center of the planet for some reason.
Uh-huh. It's also a Pokemon Sun-like.
Yeah. It's one of the best story formats you can have.
Help a cute girl, on an adventure.
Okay. Come to terms with herself and her powers, you know.
Absolutely.
Self-actualize at the end.
I might actually have a game in the same vein next time.
Good.
So I wasn't like particularly interested in the start. I thought, oh, it's the Odyssey team, and I was a little cold on Odyssey. Mm-hmm. And then you see the footage and you see the banana, and you go, oh, they just made the same thing again. But actually playing it and actually like I watched some footage, like I saw some streamers playing it, and I was like, this actually looks kind of fun. I'm not gonna say it's $500 plus buying the actual game fun, but I don't think this necessarily justifies buying a Switch 2. I think other conditions, like them raising the price on literally everything else around it, going, well, if you're gonna get one, you might want to get one now because it's not gonna get cheaper.
Never. Like, it's literally Nintendo, so it's never.
And also, yeah, everything
but
else.
Also, they might just be like, actually, it's $550 next month. We don't, or they'll probably wait till after Christmas and then be like, fuck you if you didn't buy one yet. The game didn't really feel like Odyssey to me at all, which is weird because that's the comparison everyone keeps making. Mm-hmm. One thing about it is that the bananas are optional.
Okay. It's Donkey Kong. He wants banana. Like, that's his whole thing.
Obviously, you're going to grab them, but the entire thing is more like Zelda, where a boss drops a heart piece, and you can just walk around it if you want.
Okay.
Like, you never actually. What I think is it changes the structure up so that you're doing the objectives it gives you. It's making you kill the boss at the end of an area. It's making you do whatever, like, the NPCs, like, oh, no, like, there's a water blockage over there, go punch that boulder, like, and even then you don't actually have to talk to the NPCs. You can just punch the boulder and the game will be like, okay, you did the thing, now the next level's open. Because it's very subtle, but I think it just made it flow better, where like Odyssey was like, get 10 moons to go to the next level the entire time. And so sometimes you'd end up in situations where it's like, you kill the boss, they drop 5 moons, and then it's like, okay, but you still don't have enough, just go fuck around for a bit. You know?
Yeah.
Like, this is much more goal-oriented. Like, you don't have to get the bananas. They make you just want to do it anyway, because the act of this game has three, you know how there's 4 face buttons on a controller?
Yeah.
3 of them are punch in this game.
All right.
There's punch, there's punch up, and there's punch down. And then there's the jump button, and then it has the Nintendo toggle to put the jump on the correct fucking spot in the options, like Kirby does. Because
Red, I've always heard that good Donkey Kong's never punch down.
That's good, yeah.
I was going to say that's probably the internet's favorite button.
Oh my God. The controls are very technical for a Nintendo platformer. It's weird because, like, it also uses all the shoulder buttons.
Oh. Mm.
Like, you can grab terrain and then go into, like, third-person shooter mode with a little reticule and throw it specifically. And some of the boss fights that are about, like, grabbing terrain to throw at a boss that's flying around while dodging them, while using the right analog stick or the motion controls to aim, I'm like, this is a lot. This is actually, like, heavy action game stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, I feel like in Mario Odyssey, it's a platformer. And like the fun part of the platformer to me was isolated in those challenge rooms.
Yeah.
And then having them be isolated, having them be locked into a lot of them were locked into the post game. Like it felt like the fun part was like spread out. And it's like I don't really get much out of the open areas. I just want to do the fun platforming stuff. And then eventually got to the point where trying to find those challenge rooms was just like, okay, I'm just not really having a good time anymore. I've beat the game. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
For me in Bonanza, the fun part is the open world where it's just fucking punching shit, killing enemies. It's much more action game than platformer. Like there's not a ton of platforming stuff. And I think the challenge rooms, which tend to be more the platforming or like kill 10 enemies in 30 seconds. Like those are nice, like, distractions, but they're not the main thing. So I think like the balance is
interesting,
is better because I was enjoying the main areas more than the side stuff than it being flipped in Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
And there's transformations. It's kind of Shantae-ish where like you get like these different forms, like one can hover, one can jump really high. One is just a bigger, angrier ape, and he just fucking screams when punching. And that's kind of the vibe of why I want to play this right now, is like there was something extremely cathartic about game where 90% of your action is just punching and destroying the terrain. And just like, yeah, I'm kind of in the mood for that right now. Like actually.
I just love the verbiage of a bigger, angrier ape.
Dude, he's just
so big and angry. Like,
he has a charge attack, like a charge punch that just sends a huge shockwave out. And you can buy, if you collect the bananas, you upgrade the shockwave, upgrade the charge punch. It's like charge, charge, charge. Like Pauline's like, oh my God, dude, you are really punching, huh?
Dude, you kind of, you know, maybe scared me a little bit.
Yeah, there is. It's funny. I didn't notice this myself until the end, but the idle animations with Pauline actually change over the course of the game, where at the start she's kind of nervous, and then like three levels in she's like ruffling his hair
and stuff. That's actually really cool. It's like
that stuff.
What was that one RPG, Child of Light, where she starts out barely able to swing the sword, and over the course of the game, like, she gets much more adept at swinging a blade. So that by the time she reaches the final battle, she's like one hand in that shit. Just that's like, awesome. Like a boss. Like, I love shit like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Batman Arkham Asylum's cape getting more torn up.
It's not the first Arkham Asylum game. He gets fucking messed up by the end. You can actually see his face and like blood and cuts on him.
Cool.
The Donkey Kong does not get beaten and bloody by the end of the game.
But that'd be a hell of a mechanic, wouldn't it? That'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The dark Donkey Kong, where he's just fucking done with it by the end.
He's just like grizzled. He's got like scars and like scabs on his face from just having been through
hell. Now I want this.
Yeah, it'd be real good. Oh, everybody's like, I want this. I want the hyper grim dark Metroid. No, you're not thinking big enough.
Yeah.
It's just called Donkey Kong.
Yeah, it's just called Donkey Kong.
Or the Donkey Kong.
The Donkey Kong.
I was thinking earlier, this has nothing to do with what actually happens, but I was like, what if this leads to like a Metal Gear Solid 5 type ending where Donkey Kong goes evil at the end, kidnaps Pauline, gets to the top of like the girders from Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It's raining, and then you just look down and see Mario, and that's how the game ends.
That would be perfect.
It does not go that way, obviously.
Because they're cowards.
It would have been funny if this was like ended up being Dark Origin story.
Yeah.
The actual story, though, for a Nintendo game, they put a shocking amount of emphasis on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like
Miyamoto's shit in his pants.
There's more story than like Galaxy for sure. Like, there's areas that are just fully dedicated to vibes and progressing the story. There's a couple, like, fairly long cutscenes towards the end, like finishing Pauline's arc. And then, I'm not going to say what it is. I kind of wish I hadn't gotten spoiled, but the last couple hours just go fucking insane. Like, this ends so huge. One, I thought of Contra at one point. That's the only comparison I'm going to make.
Wow.
Aw, cool.
I was like, oh, you guys just went for it. So it ends extremely strong. I was really happy with it. And then there is a post game. I put it down for like a week after that. And then one night I was like, let's just peek right now. And it was like, I went back to the original opening area with all the powers that you have now. And just basically completely destroyed it. And I was like, it's a little dull now, huh? Like, once you've lost that, the story progression and, like, the motivation to keep moving forward. And it just becomes open sandbox. I was like,
hey, it's Odyssey. Sure.
Yeah, now I'm like, now I'm not actually sure. So, like, I will go do the thing that it asked me to do and see how that goes. But I think, like, the elders that you meet over the course of the journey, they're just like, give me 500 bananas or something like that. If it's that, I'm just going to be like, okay, peace. Yeah, I actually really like this game. I think, shockingly,
that's a win.
Nintendo's having a good year on this podcast.
Yeah, like, I can't think of anybody
between the Pokemon arc and the Kirby arc, I'm like, oh shit.
Oh no.
Like, we've had years where it's just like all Falcom or something like that. Yeah. And this year it's just all Nintendo. I mean, even I did like ROM slam hack stuff this time. So
slam dunking Falcom in the trash. Oh god, sorry, I couldn't finish the joke because I started feeling like bile in my throat. Ugh. No, like, they're still extremely evil corporation. Still hate them, but look, sometimes the games are good. What are you gonna say?
It's funny because I played Kirby in the Forgotten Land early in the year, specifically because I thought I wasn't going to get a Switch 2. And then they put the DLC for it out the other week, and it's like $20 and really anemic, like 12 remixes of levels, and I'm just like, oh well, now I'm good because I've already played it.
Yeah.
Like, I probably will pick it up at some point when I'm ready to just replay the entire game. Like, if you just load it up with a complete save file, you're going to be done so fucking quickly and just be like, what the hell?
For $20.
Yep. God, it's also kind of funny that it's remixes of the existing levels when the post game already existed.
Oh no.
And remixed it of existing levels.
Oh no.
It doesn't sound as robust as the extra content in the Return to Dreamland.
Yeah, exactly. You've also got this comparison point of here's how you do a remaster and add content, like the whole Magalore epilogue thing, the whole additional changes they made to the arena. Like, that's my kind of gold standard right there.
Mm-hmm. John wants to get to this when he wants to replay that game.
Yeah. So one other thing, we're finishing the journey, I guess, this time. I've got ending number one in 100 Line Last Defense Academy.
Holy shit. Oh shit.
Cause after fucking around and fucking around and fucking around, it was like, okay, I've got like 56 or 57 endings. I understand the flowchart enough. Like, I know where I want to go now, and I'm just going to ignore all distractions and just mainline it. So I have to talk a little bit about the structure of that game, but I think at this point, nobody really cares. So it's kind of like you have the first 100 days, and you kind of learn the setup of the story. Like, here's what can happen in the present, and here's, like, little fucking crumbs of the backstory. Mm-hmm. And they leave you with some huge cliffhangers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem I had with the game in the second arc of like the full 100 ending flowchart is that you kept getting stories about other versions of the way the present can occur.
Mm-hmm.
And like, things were taking wild fucking turns, like third party
wishes core.
Kind of. There is a zombie arc. Like, There's a zombie arc. There's a serial killer arc. There's like basically the thing, the academy being invaded by third party members, like who aren't the enemies, but they aren't on your side either. And they're wearing like big suits, very reminiscent of Virtue's Last Reward. Like, oh, Uchikoshi just loves that kind of look, where it's like, mm-hmm, now you can't tell who's inside it because it's just this big formless suit. And it's just like, I keep seeing all these variations of things, how things could go, but I'm still not getting the fucking backstory of what's happening. So there's like 20 routes in the game. There is one locked route. Once you've read enough of the side like variations, you'll probably come to the point where it says, okay, you're able to read this one route right now. And that's basically Uchikoshi's answer arc to why everything can go sideways in the present.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads to a very like favorable outcome for the present. But it wasn't very satisfying as an ending to me because I still don't know the fucking backstory. So like it's the answer arc for things in the present that but also things that didn't even occur in the original 100 days.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
So it's like I've been edging on these answers.
Oh my God.
For like literally 100 hours. So that's when I put the game down for a month and played Trails. So then I came back and was like, okay, am I really going to sit here and grind out another 40 endings and do ending one last? Or am I just going to fucking take like 8 hours and mainline it? And I decided to do the latter. And I had a really good time with that main ending.
Yes!
It finally gave me the answers I craved. I know what's going on now for real reals. And also that ending, like saying the game doesn't have a true ending is kind of false, because the other thing about the endings is that they all would hit very similar beats in terms of like, and here's the enemy you fight at the end every time. Basically, this one has a new final boss. It goes extremely hard. It made me cry. It has it has like a 5-minute animated thing at the end. Like, it's so clearly, obviously the ending.
Yeah.
It doesn't kick you back to the flow chart after it plays.
There you go.
It just goes back to it says the ending goes back to title screen.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's crazy.
There's no true ending. Clearly, it's just bullshit marketing hype.
And it's funny because this ending isn't locked behind the gate that the other one is, where you could just get, if you got lucky, you could just get this as your first one.
That's crazy.
Weird.
You could. And you may have a better time doing that also, because it's just such an excessively long game.
Yeah.
But like, now that I've seen the ending, now that I've had that moment, I am a little like, okay, but what do the other endings have? Like, there's a final choice on day 100. So obviously I went back and saw the other ending, and that one's also crazy, but it's clearly not the true ending.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then I went back to like day 82 and did another choice to see how that could go out. And hey, doesn't go well for everybody as usual. I think at least about the final routes that I have left is because they start later in the timeline. Like, it doesn't take as long, because like when you're having a choice on day like 3 and then having to play out 97 more days for those routes, like, it's just excessively long.
That's way too much.
And there's things they could have done, like morning announcement stuff, like Monokuma-esque, like rise and shine, everybody, or good night, everybody. Like, doing that every single fucking time for not 100 days, but thousands of days is just... Certain battles happen on the same day in every route, and skipping is slow. It's hard to explain why, but skipping is slow because it still plays out all the dialogue.
Yeah.
It just skips the battle part. You still like load into the battle screen. Like, it doesn't skip fast enough. And it's just like, if you just saved 5 minutes here and there over the course of this game, you'd end up saving hours by the end. Yeah, that's my journey with that game. I'm still coming out positive on it, but it is not for everybody. It is a fucking behemoth. It's like reading a trilogy of like visual novels
like,
in one.
I'm the resident visual novel head, and even I'm just kind of like very apprehensive on this one.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing about the late game is that the strategy game part just kind of goes away because it keeps your progression in your levels. And when you go to similar fights, it lets you skip them. So once you've done like two routes,
you're already overpowered enough to.
But it just lets you skip everything anyway.
I mean, that's fine for me because that seemed like the least interesting part of the game to me. I had no interest in it anyway.
It's not as strong as like 13 Sentinels, but I think it's close. Like, I think it was like a pretty essential part to the first act. And then luckily they balance the final battle in True Ending so that your levels don't fucking matter.
That's cool.
So like it did again, that's another thing that made that ending so satisfying is that it had one last hurrah for the actual gameplay side of it. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, hello, haven't seen you in 70 hours. What's up?
God, it's funny because you just kept skipping battles.
Because the battles themselves are just the same thing.
The same thing. There's no point in redoing them.
Yeah. If something, there's one point where like, if something different happens in that fight, they won't let you skip it. So occasionally I heard somebody say like, I was on ending 85 and all of a sudden it didn't let me skip a battle. Wild. Like there's some variations, which is probably why they don't let you immediately skip it. But I think they could have done like, have a character summarize the fight in text instead of loading the whole thing, going through the motions and still taking like 5 minutes on a fight you skip. Just be like, oh, they attacked again. We won. 2 seconds. Like that game needed some quality of life and editing.
It needs a lot of just speeding things up. Like I mentioned it before, but it's very similar to how like you could probably say 30% of Virtue's Last Rewards runtime is literally watching the animation of dots moving on the map.
And in that that was frustrating because it really didn't feel like it led to anything either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's my last Academy journey.
Nice.
Damn. It's nice. Oh,
what's the hour? What's your hour?
What's
count
your
at
final
the end?
Hour count? Yeah.
Okay. The Steam hour count. Oh, I don't have Steam open because we're recording. It's at like 150 probably. Oh,
okay.
Maybe it's higher.
No longer than Umineko.
Okay. It's just longer than under 170.
Longer than the longest BNI I've ever read.
It's just under 170 hours right now on Steam. I don't know how much of that was idling, though.
Mm. Cool. Yeah, I'm glad that turned out, because I'm still, like, even though I'm hesitant, it's like, come on, it's like, it's Uchikoshi. And, like, you know, being the big Uchikoshi stan that I am, I kind of have to. Like, I did World's End Club. Like,
to do anything.
Yeah.
We're in control of our own fate.
We are.
It's just, at least in this respect. But I am glad that I treated you good at the end.
Yeah.
Right. I'm glad that it didn't end with like a wet fart.
Oh man, if True Ending was a wet fart, I would have just been like throw it in the trash.
Literally removing it from his library.
Now no one gets to play
it. Now nobody.
It's just like you could watch so many 12 episode animes in 170 hours instead of playing 100 line.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of, like, if you want to look at valuation like that, I suppose, you know, some people, like, maybe some people just want what 100 line is doing and all. Like, I don't know that I've talked to anybody that loves everything that game's doing, because everybody seems to kind of hit that moment where it's just like, I kind of need the mainline. I need to mainline this.
It's so much. Because I think, like, exploring to find the paths that would open up the locked route kind of was the game for me for a while. But then after I did that, it was like, oh, I've still got 40 endings left. What the fuck? Like, there's still actually so much left. And I'm at 150 plus hours. Please, please give me the answers in the
ending. Hey, you know what this needs? More content, it sounds like.
Yeah.
They should better add some in post-release.
Yeah. Do some DLC.
I wonder if they actually end up doing it. Probably, I don't know if it sold well enough.
I'd want to see the numbers on this, because I know that they said this was kind of like a do or die game for them. And I know that it got a lot of positive press and a lot of people were playing it. So I kind of really wonder like what this game's numbers look like.
Well, what a journey.
What a journey.
Yeah. I think that's everything we've talked about.
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it.
I think that's everything everything that matters.
Pretty much. So we are going to do y'all a nice solid, and we are going to get ourselves on out of here. But before we do, I want John to tell the internet folks at home where they can find him.
You can find me at farawaytimes.com.
Wow, nice and zippy. Just one simple little URL. Rhett, what's your URL this time? Do you have one ready? Do you have one cooked?
I guess it's rhett.bsky.social.
Why? There you go. Finally, a straightforward answer for once. And you can find me probably just complaining all week because I'm going to be sick and I know it. And I hate it. So that's going to do things. That's going to do it for things here at the SoxCast. So me and Rhett are going to go play Hollow Knight Silksong now. And I don't know about the rest of you, but remember, we are the podcast that loves you. We're the only ones that love you.